We're here to fight in the war room about comedies.
Whoever can tell the best joke gets theirs at number one.
All right, this is so.
Knock knock.
This category we start with every. No one's home. This year we start.
Good one. You get to pick this whole category, and it's not because of your joke. It's because you watched a lot more comedies than I did.
Yeah,
this year.
I like watching comedies. Yeah. And I think there's a lot of good ones, but there's also like to me this category has got standouts, and then. Everything that we watch gets listed. That's how we start. So mm-hmm. I think we both feel real good about Barry. Mm-hmm. So we put him up there. Actually,
Fuel and Stupid Gesture was a movie.
We should do this one by one. So Barry, we're going to talk a lot about Barry. Mm-hmm. A Futile and Stupid Gesture. This is the story of National Lampoon.
Right. The magazine and the franchise that it became.
Series or movie?
It was a movie. It was the other Bill Hader. Will Forte, is that his name?
Will Forte, yeah. The other Bill Hader.
Bill Hader, the guy I associate for some reason with Bill Hader.
It's a good way to put it, because they are kind of like have a weird straight man absurd style, though.
For sure. And I think it was good, but it's not going to top the list here.
Right. Okay.
It's going to continue to slip down.
John Oliver still doing excellent week on last week. Excellent work on Last Week Tonight. It is, it's not perfect, but this long form, kind of like the Daily Show, like a long form analysis of a single issue per week is good. It's surprising, informative. It's entertaining. It's funny. Mm-hmm. I like the real world shenanigans he gets up to. Last season's no exception. Santa Clarita Diet, I tapped out halfway through season one. I did too. Show.
And then I picked it back up. I thought season two was a little better than season one.
Okay.
But like it doesn't beat the major things on here. It doesn't beat Glow or Always Sunny or Archer.
Silicon Valley. I in season four thought Silicon Valley was kind of entering a nadir. Mm-hmm. And I felt like this season was a bit of a return to form.
You're going to have to refresh my memory on Silicon Valley season 5. This is the season after Tobolowsky, is that right? Or is this the season where he's ousted?
It's the season after Tobolowsky. It's a season where Hooley is like kind of on the ropes and trying to come back at Pied
Piper.
And
Gavin gets like fired, or but
Pied Piper's having trouble getting like they're having trouble finding clients and getting more rounds of funding. So it's mm-hmm. all about there's like they found a artificially intelligent, super intelligent robot on there. There was the cryptocurrency that Guilfoy created. There was
that almost bankrupted.
There was the Tesla shenanigans with Kumail's character. There was
Dinesh.
Jared's Heart of Darkness shit, where he had had to beat a COO, so we found an assistant for Richard. There's a lot of good stuff here, but it's not. I don't think it's as good as like its initial seasons. So I don't know. This makes a top five anyway. BoJack Horseman is absolutely one of the funniest and most insightful comedies. There was a half hour single shot scene where it's entirely of BoJack giving a eulogy at his mother's funeral. That was one of the funniest, but most growing up with a narcissist mother myself, like seeing like this bitter son at this funeral, giving like a one man stand up with his dead mother's coffin as like the straight man. And then the denouement, the twist at the end instantly made this like, it was like this brutal kind of like rip yourself apart type of performance. And then at the end, it becomes this just like in 30 seconds, it turns into absurd farce. It's like it's one of the best things on. Like, it hurts me that more people don't watch it, because it's just it does a really good job. I think it's one of the smartest, because a lot of places, a lot of comedies especially, took shots. I took a shot at doing like something insightful about the Me Too movement. And I think BoJack was one of the few that actually said something you did actually move the conversation forward. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I fucking love BoJack. If you like if you like Always Sunny and that kind of humor, this is just like a maybe even better version of that, because it's cartoon characters. They truly are, you know, just emotional stunt people.
Uh-huh.
So yeah, I like it.
Okay.
Saturday Night Live. I think Saturday Night Live is kind of in. I'm worried because a lot of the big names are retiring after this next year. Like I don't know about retiring. Their contracts are the Kate McKinnons. A lot of the crop of new people that came in the last 5 years are all kind of scheduled to at least expire the contract this year. And I don't know what they're going to do. But last year, I thought it was a really good year for Saturday Night Live. You watched a lot of it too, didn't you?
Mm.
Oh, really?
My girlfriend watches basically all of it.
Adam Driver, I thought, was a great episode. The Dave Chappelle episode was great. There's a lot of good episodes. It's Always Sunny in Philly.
I'm 9 episodes into the 10 episode season.
In my opinion, one of the all time great seasons.
I've had a lot of fun with this season.
And they did a lot of uniquely Philly things. Like, I loved the mini series they had about winning the Super Bowl, which I thought was well handled and something they had to kind of do. I thought they really who's Dennis? I always forget this fucker's name.
Glenn Howerton.
Glenn Howerton. I thought they skillfully navigated his largely absent role. Like, he felt like he was in it a lot, even though you could tell he was probably there for like one or two full episodes of shooting and just stuff that they pieced together in others.
Yeah.
He was a real doll and like two.
That was pretty good.
The character of Glenn was played by a real doll, and it was super fucking effective. Yeah, I liked it. It's great. See, and you haven't even got to the standout.
Sleeps with Charlie introduces the real doll to the waitress.
Yeah.
She sleeps with it and leaves him.
So here's one that I haven't seen any of, and you have, Glow.
Like, oh yeah, no, there's something. So this is like a half comedy, half drama sort of thing, kind of like Barry. It's not as edgy as something like Barry, where you know there's a hitman and he's doing all these horrible things, right. And somehow they play that for comedy. This is more just a straightforward, lighthearted kind of comedy. And man, I just don't see a lot of those nowadays. Mm. So when
are you saying this is Parks and Rec for women wrestlers?
There's a feel-good element to it that's like, you know, they don't, although Mark Maron also adds a little spice to it, which I think is good, because I don't know if I want a show that is all like Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt kind of thing.
Well, see, that's the thing. Like, I feel like I've lost the ability to enjoy a regular comedy. Like Brooklyn Nine-Nine, a Parks and Rec, a The Office, a Kimmy Gibbler, the fantastic Kimmy Schmidt. That those levels of comedy is like it's hard to go back to Playboy when you've gotten into Hustler, you know? Yeah. It's like it's hard to go back to that when you're into Barry and BoJack and Atlanta. When you see like the really wild, crazy, inventive mixing of drama and comedy and important issues, it's like it's hard to go back to the stuff that's just like laugh track, you know?
I find it pretty easy when my day to day is mixed with comedy and drama to lean into a show like Glow, where, you know, it's a little lighter. It can kind of take me out of the things that I'd maybe rather not think about for an hour. And I'm cool with that. Glow is pretty high on my list. It's probably higher than like Silicon Valley. But I only have like, I think I've seen 6 of these shows, and American Vandal I've only seen 2 episodes of.
Okay.
So Glow's pretty high for me. I could understand if it wasn't very high for you. And I think this is more
Comment on it because it's right. Like I haven't seen it. And I'm not like with 2 seasons in, I'm probably not going to jump into it.
No.
Disenchantment. Do you know about this?
So this is the, it's a Futurama.
Matt Groening. Yeah. Like it's a Futurama, The Simpsons and it's DNA is unmistakable.
And it's more of a fantasy thing, right?
It is. Yeah. It's Futurama only the opposite direction. Mm. And as a big fan of Simpsons, as a big fan of Futurama, I couldn't get past the first 3 episodes. Like I thought this was felt old and stale and kind of lifeless. And there were a couple jokes that did land. You know, they haven't forgot to how to tell a smart visual gag, but. And I don't know. Again, it could be that like if Futurama came out today, I wouldn't like it as much. But yeah, it just didn't do it for me. I was disappointed. Archer Danger Island is like, so if you've lost track of Archer, the guy who wrote Archer got bored with doing Archer, and he's essentially found a way to pivot it into the, like, you know, one year they got 10 tons of cocaine and tried to move it on the international market. And then one year they did this. And then the last three seasons have taken place within Archer's damaged brain after he's been shot. And he has these crazy fantasy sequences. And this was essentially like the old Disney show Tailspin. It's okay. That it's the Archer crew. Fuck. As different, like the crazy German doctor is a parrot. Pam is this like 6'8" strapping dude that's Archer's sidekick. And
wow, this has gone places.
Yeah, no, and it's super. It's just as funny. It's just like, it's kind of entertaining how they can just keep hammering this into wilder and wilder shapes, but. The kind of like fast paced office, super cutting and acerbic humor.
Still very Archer. Up. It's
yeah.
But it's
yeah.
Crazy.
Yeah. It's pretty funny. But it's also, you know, kind of in its end of its creative runway. Mm-hmm. Literally in this season. American Vandal 2.
Yeah, season 2 of this. I've only seen 2 episodes, but not because I thought it was bad.
Uh-huh.
Just because I don't know. I stopped watching it. I had other things to do at the time. This is a weird one because it is basically like, you know, the Return of the Jedi to Star Wars New Hope.
Yeah.
It's the same thing, essentially, but I was kind of surprised that they could still make that funny.
Yeah, because they also, with the religious school, they mixed in a little bit of some of the... there was a whole bunch of... like Spotlight and The Searcher. There's some of these kind of religious themes where they had like a, you know, some menacing nuns and priests. And I thought they added a couple other elements to the season, because I've actually watched everything but the finale episode.
Okay.
And the other thing is the physical comedy. When you actually see the Vandal, this, his first thing is he spiked the lemonade in the school with something that had everyone have uncontrollable diarrhea.
Yeah.
And the scene of the school being gripped in this vivid, like people shit. Like there's this one shot that every time they show it, it's this kid shitting in a urinal.
Mm-hmm.
It's just really funnily staged. People in bed and you know, crapping their drawers and shitting in like several people sharing a single big industrial trash can. It's crazy. It's pretty funny.
That's good. They mine everything that show does for all of its comedy.
Yeah.
And it still works, even though it's more of the same.
And it's also like the central kind of figure is like last year he was kind of like this you know, big, dumb, kind of jock guy. This, it's like this very smart, weird, precocious, like nerdy, dorky teenager guy. And he's like the fucking best, man. Me and Cecily are endlessly quoting this guy. It's fun. I don't know how many more seasons they got in it, but it's the very absurdly high production value. And it's so funny because they lampshade that, like they mentioned, like last season, like they made it seem like they'd shot a documentary, Netflix bought them, and then that's how they showed like before and after, like the animatics they had when it was just a student film versus, and it's just like all in universe really fucking works and is funny. Mm-hmm. So, and then Atlanta season 2, this is a fucking phenomenal comedy. It's hilarious. It's insightful. It doesn't even have a star. It's got like a loose collection of like Donald Glover is definitely the guy behind it and doing the most, but it's like Paperboy is a super funny character. His right hand man is really funny. Zazie Beetz as Donald Glover's on again, off again girlfriend is like, she has entire standalone episodes that don't miss a beat. It's great. Like, if you're not watching Atlanta and you like comedies at all, you should fucking watch Atlanta. It's really good. So that's the list of the comedies that we have on the table. It'll be interesting to see what the user category looks like. I'm going to take Atlanta and American Vandal and shove them all the way to the top.
And Archer, apparently.
Nope.
You did.
Wait. Shit.
Yeah.
Fuck. What did I do?
You got one extra.
Oh, okay. That's fine. Always Sunny is going to go way to the top.
Okay.
I'm not putting these in any particular order. I'm just, if I cut and paste above one, it'll fuck up my fonts. BoJack Horseman, I want to put at the top, towards the top. Okay. And then you want to put Glow up there too, right?
Yeah, I think I would put Glow. Yeah, that's where I would slot Glow on my list.
Do you have any desire to sort out of the top five? Because I kind of think we should derive a top five.
I mean, like I said, I'm going to have very little input on this because I haven't watched the best comedies this year.
Uh-huh.
I think Barry was one of the best.
Yeah, I agree with that.
And I did watch that. Always Sunny to me is always one of the best, but
it's going to be very hard for me. Why the hell does this keep?
And I will say, I doubt Glow is going to remain in the top five.
Okay. Well, cause like I said, that's one I don't know.
Right.
American. So I just don't know how to sort these top. Like, right now I got Barry's number one, two Atlanta, three Always Sunny, four BoJack. I think if it was me, and it sounds like it largely is going to be me, mm-hmm. I would go Atlanta barely edging out Barry's first season. Then it's Always Sunny. And well, actually, BoJack, I think, is better than Always Sunny.
Yeah.
They're all doing very different things.
Oh, yeah.
And they're all very, very funny. And like Atlanta and Barry, like, boy, that's really tough. And then there's like a little bit of fall off to BoJack, and then a little bit of fall off to Always Sunny. And then, of course, I don't know. Like, Glow's a big question mark for me. I would put American Vandal over it just because I haven't seen Glow.
Yeah. I've seen enough of American Vandal to think that I probably wouldn't enjoy watching it as much.
Uh-huh.
Is it a funnier comedy, I guess, is the question, though. And probably say yes, just because Glow isn't all about comedy, whereas American Vandal is going for comedy and nailing comedy.
That's what I like about Atlanta and Barry is they're definitely like the dramedies, but they have an emphasis. Like some of this, like always... Orange is the New Black, I don't think is really a comedy, especially in later seasons. Like, it definitely has funny things in it, but then so does fucking Breaking Bad, and no one calls it a dramedy.
Right.
Whereas
right.
Atlanta, like, even in the really serious episodes, always will have at least one scene that, like, has you kind of, like, really invested in the characters, and they just hit you with something fucking hilarious. Or the intrinsic premise of the episode is funny.
And Barry has a couple of characters who are just there for comedy.
Yeah.
Essentially.
Yeah.
Which in my mind makes it enough of a comedy to fit in this category.
So let's look at, cause like Barry is interesting cause it's the one thing that we've both seen. I think Barry's amazing cause Barry can pull off fairly compelling, like Marvel cinematic universe level of action and violence, and also just be fucking hilarious.
Mm-hmm.
And they derive a lot of humor from like the weird gangster types that they hang, like this
yeah, I mean NoHo and the
NoHo, my god, NoHo
and his boss or his underling, who's the big scary
it's the guy who played the Remus.
Yes.
Remus in Boardwalk, and he also played the Yellow King in True Detective.
Okay. I wasn't sure if that was him. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. He's great, too. I mean, he's hilarious.
But NoHo, like, there's a scene where he sends, like, an emoji that had one of the biggest laughs because he's just a funny-looking dude, and when you see that in Bitmoji form
yeah.
with, like, it's like, These guys use text the same way you and I do, but they're texting about murdering someone. It's like like using an awkward emoji about like
it more like somebody 10 years younger than me.
Yeah.
But he's also talking about murder and gangster shit. Like, yeah, it's so good. And then even Barry, like his awkward demeanor in places, his, you know, kind of inability to be a normal human being sometimes is hilarious.
Yeah.
Even in scenes where it's also tragic and scary.
Uh-huh.
And it's just a great blend of comedy and drama.
But then he
has
this, like, there's another standout is where, like, people are, you know, he's an ex-soldier, mm-hmm. but he's also a current hitman.
Yeah.
And doing very morally ambiguous black things. He's mm-hmm. just murdering people for hire. This isn't, like, you know, he's not saving the world here.
Yeah.
And he's also taking these acting lessons, and there's this part where, like, his class, who are a bunch of, you know, liberal artsy farty types, are openly talking about how uncomfortable they are at the concept of people death, and if you kill someone, there's no way you can come back for that. And Barry starts to get uncomfortable, and there's a situation where and Henry Winkler, who is the drama instructor, kind of comes in and says, like, look, you know, because he's just giving his moving speech, and he's like, look, we couldn't possibly put ourselves in your situation. It was wrong for us to do that. So, and then he turns to class and goes, but I think we can all agree that outside the realm of war, murders the war. And it just completely undercuts everything that just happened. And it's so fucking funny.
Right.
It's so fucking funny. And how they deftly kind of handle that tension I love his daydreams. Like, where he's having this daydream of, like, where him and his girl are together and they're married and they're like Hollywood celebrities, and John Hamm comes up at a barbecue and he's like, hey man, can I hit your shitter? And that's like what it's like. It's just really funny shit like that I've never seen before. Yeah. Like the way they visualize the kind of like this fantasy life this guy has is great. Mm-hmm. I don't know. That's the other thing. Is like Always Sunny. Do you want to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah. So there were some really good episodes and episodes that I'm not like primed to like all that much. Like I just finished watching episode 9, which is kind of the conclusion of the 2-part Super Bowl thing that they did. And I found that one hilarious, like mostly on Danny DeVito's back, just like his kidney stone stuff, like his just reactions and acting there. So good. So freaking good.
He's a man. Wait till you see it, because it's like peak DeVito in the finale.
Oh, fuck. I can't wait. I'm going to watch it tonight.
It's so funny. I feel like in round season 10 that Always Sunny got in a little bit of a creative slump, and then they had some kind of comedic colonic, and it cleared out all their bullshit, and they have just been killing it these last few seasons.
Yeah.
Man, it's really funny.
There was the Ladybugs, journey, which I thought was awesome.
Okay, because they even I love how they even talk about, like, is this like one of those weird like lady reboots that doesn't need, like, they have that meta discussion,
like a Ghostbusters kind of thing. Yeah.
Exactly.
And then every time they bring in this poor fucking waiter, he's in the Super Bowl one. Frank ties his shoelaces together again. I love it.
Crickety Ricket still.
Dude, I was super bummed when they kicked him out of the Super Bowl party.
Right.
And then when he showed back up, I was like, yeah, but he doesn't do anything. Like,
yeah.
He doesn't get to shine in that episode.
Not as many shenanigans. This wasn't they left out the Poils, although I think that's a smart move, because I feel like they're in danger of being ran into the ground.
Yep.
Or the McPoils, I should say. Mm-hmm. Yeah, great. And I don't like. Why? Did you hear anything about
Dennis is. Fucking sexual harassment seminar episode was great as well.
Yeah.
I thought it was just going to turn into a train wreck where these horrible people ruined this otherwise great seminar. And then it went so much further, which is what I love about Always Sunny. Like, when you think these people are going to be bad in one way, they're as bad as you could possibly imagine in all the other ways.
Yeah, like they have this thing where it's kind of like the premise and then like the subversion of the premise, and then like that second stage explodes at some point.
Yeah.
And they're one of the best in the business of doing that. Mm-hmm. So do we have a top 5 that we're happy with? Atlanta, Barry, BoJack, Always Sunny, and Glow?
You want Glow in that mix?
I'm giving you Glow.
Okay.
Because I can't say. An American Vandal is essentially, did you like the half gallon of vanilla ice cream you got in season one? Well, here's a half gallon of chocolate.
Yeah.
Because it's shit instead of dicks this year.
Yep.
So whereas Glow presumably builds on a continuity and the characters keep getting better and better, mm-hmm. and the humor is more specific. So like I'm putting it in the simulator and saying like, okay, yeah, maybe it's better than American Vandal, because I don't think American Vandal, like, it's significant drop off between the top four and American Vandal.
There's nothing below this that you'd put up there.
I mean, like I said, I don't the order beyond the top six is not in any kind of, like, I'm not gonna think about, like, you know, I mean, Silicon Valley's too low and Saturday Night Live's too low, and not everything else about right, but yeah. Do you want to put Glow above American Vandal, having seen two episodes of American Vandal and knowing it's exactly like that?
Yeah, I enjoyed my time with Glow.
Okay.
More than season two of American Vandal.
Then let's make that our top five. And
so what is the top five?
I will reserve the right for the award show to flip the top four around, but right now it's number one Atlanta, number two Barry, number three BoJack, number four Always Sunny, and number five Glow. And I am super excited about new seasons for all of this, except for Glow, because I don't watch it.
Yeah. All right, cool. That's
deliberation
it for
done. Biggest miss.
What this show? Is going to be a weird category, man.
Yeah.
Some of these are movies that I saw on Netflix that I'm guessing you haven't seen, like Cargo.
Mm-hmm.
And I haven't seen Ballad of Buster Scruggs or Serial Season 3 or The Walking Dead Season 9A.
Okay, so let's just talk about them in general. What is Cargo?
Cargo is a movie with the guy that I always, Martin Freeman.
Oh, right.
And it's about a zombie apocalypse that happens.
That old chestnut.
Yeah, it's pretty well-worn territory. But the twist here is that it's set in the Australian outback.
Mm.
It has a lot of mix with, like, the aboriginal themes and stuff. It was pretty interesting.
To the average Australian, would zombies be more or less lethal than the baseline wildlife in the outback?
About the same, I think.
Yeah, I feel like if any place would be unfazed by zombie apocalypse, it would be Australia.
For sure.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I didn't think this movie was anything super special. It certainly didn't have the buzz around it that something like a Bird Box has. So I don't think this is going to be very high up in this category, but it's simply something I watched that we didn't get a chance to talk about anywhere else.
Do you think the Australian Rick Grimes, you know, Rick Grimes had the policy of like, it's just like, it's all just light meat and dark meat now. You know, do you think the Australian Rick Grimes says, there's no rules, it's just life.
Jesus.
yeah. I don't know why we remain very popular in Australia. Disproportionately so, but sorry, it's out. They probably don't even know out, but Outback Steakhouse, ironically, not available in Australia.
I can't imagine they would have an Outback Steakhouse there. But
anyway, so Cargo. All right. I could see how that is in our wheelhouse. Fahrenheit 451. Now, I haven't seen this film.
We struck this from another category because I totally forgot everything about this film immediately after watching it.
And here's my thing. Like, I feel like this movie made no cultural impact at all. It's like what they were afraid of the Apollo 13 astronauts would happen. They just hit the atmosphere and skip off into outer space.
Yep.
Like,
this is like the tears of an Atlantean. they're just carried away by the water. Nothing happened with 451. It was carried away by the book burning fire.
So I feel like that wasn't a very big miss. The biggest miss is kind of like in retrospect.
Right. What was huge that we either didn't know was going to be huge and so we didn't cover it, or we knew was going to be huge and we just couldn't get to it.
Right. So Maniac, now you're making a bit of an argument because that was an interesting thing. It also, like, I think was kind of up in the air. I like stuff that's like a thesis that, like, you kind of have to get to the final episode. It's kind of the difference between a Euro game and American style game. Like, No one kind of knows who's winning until the very final round versus like Risk, where some dude's been sitting not playing for 5 hours. I like that. Like, this could go either way. I could either like it or hate it by the final episode. Mm-hmm. And I felt like this was an epitome of that. But like a lot of Netflix stuff, it didn't seem like it really penetrated culturally.
Yeah. I mean, certainly not as much as others on this. I feel it's sort of akin to something like Legion, where like they're experimenting with a lot of different techniques and mm-hmm. weird storytelling devices. Mm-hmm. And
it was very experimental.
It goes places.
Right.
But it didn't get a ton of buzz either.
It got a decent, it's getting some award buzz. So like it's at least something. Whereas Fahrenheit 451, I don't think I've seen anything.
Yeah. I mean, Cargo and 451, I'd drop to the bottom.
And here's the other thing is like, if this was like on Hulu and they released the first two and then everyone won a week, mm-hmm. there had been so much more buzz because there would have been a mystery that people could solve and like, oh, what do you think this is? What do you think the C drug? What is it? Was it A, B, and C or is it Alpha, Beta?
I think it was A, B, and C.
Okay. So, like, you know, like, meanings, but since it all just kind of gets shit out and it took you, like, what, not even 6 hours to watch, like, it was there and it is the pop rocks of entertainment. Here's another one I think you can make a good argument for: A Star Is Born. Getting some Oscar buzz. I've heard nothing but, like, this is not just surprisingly good, but just good. Good movie.
If our audience were primarily middle-aged women.
Hey, now.
Look, all I'm saying I went to the theater.
You are pitching down a lot of my sensibilities here with this middle-aged woman crap.
I went to the theater, and I would say I was one of five men in a fully packed, sold-out theater. So,
there was no one under
30 there. I can guarantee that.
Mm-hmm. I've been that guy a lot, and there's nothing wrong with being that guy.
No, there's not. I thought A Star Was Born was an excellent movie.
Uh-huh.
Probably, and there was a ton of buzz around it and still is with the awards. So, yeah, that one probably deserves to be up near the top.
Maybe we should do like an Oscar catch up. Like, you know, if there's a couple Oscar movies, we could try to get that on Bald Movies, but man. Bird Box.
I mean, this is huge.
Now, this one does seem like it's got some cultural legs. Like, I'm still seeing Bird Box jokes, like, you know, a good 4, 5, 6 weeks out from it debuting.
Yeah, I mean, it's been a while and I saw it and it was pretty good. But the buzz around it was enormous.
Yes.
And if we had covered it, we would have, you know, captured some of that buzz. That's what this category is all about. That to me goes up to the top immediately.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
And A Star Is Born probably goes up right underneath it.
Yeah. I'm gonna take Maniac up there too, cause it's definitely in a class above these other. I think the Cargo and Fahrenheit are more theoretical misses than actual misses. Because maybe Cargo is excellent, but nobody's talking about it either. Ballad of Buster Scruggs, I thought, was another miss because I very thoroughly enjoyed it. It's a Coen Brothers full feature film on Netflix. Are you fucking kidding me?
Yeah, that is well within our wheelhouse. Like, even if we released that in the Fargo feed.
Yeah.
That's something we probably should have covered.
Ooh, that's not a bad idea. You could cross-promote shit like that.
Mm.
Okay, Homecoming. I feel like this is definitely you're going to want to argue. This is something I'm going to be enjoying this weekend. I'm going to move this up to the tippy top just for the fuck of it. Serial Season 3. Okay. I don't think that you'll ever in a million years do this, but I do think a lot of the Serial coverage podcasts that kind of grew up around season one that then kind of got killed in season two, there was a vacuum, and I thought Serial season three is interesting, and I think it would be interesting for us to talk about it both from the promotional and technical and kind of like the business side of podcasts, and I thought the, you know, examination of what goes wrong in the American criminal justice system would have been super entertaining to talk about too. But I don't know. I don't know if there is a market for a podcast coverage for a podcast.
I think there is. I don't know if it's our market.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, how many of those are we really going to do, right? Because if we're trying to capture some kind of buzz for Serial Season 3, but then we're not also developing plans to continue to kind of snowball whatever we capture.
So here's
what
a soft
doing?
Pitch. What do you think? Just to do a little empire business here. Mm-hmm. What if we had a Bald Move podcast feed where we talk about things like Dan Carlin podcasts, Serial podcast, Malcolm Gladwell podcast, like some of the ones that are like not just events, but also meaty topics for discussion that are like challenging and, you know, present maybe new ways to look at things or new information. We've definitely built an audience for that type of discussion. But I don't know how popular it would be.
Right. That's the thing. Like if I'm going to branch out into another
medium, it's going to be gaming.
Like I'm way more into gaming than I am into
podcasting,
like consuming podcasts anymore. Yeah.
Yeah. Huh. Cause I'm on that kind of gaming lull. Okay. Well, like I said, I just wanted to see what you're, cause I think way you could do that.
I do think it would have been an interesting discussion. I think there was a fair bit of buzz around season 3 of Serial, right? Just,
I can't tell because I didn't enter. I just listened to it on my own and just kind of like I didn't do any second follow-on conversations. But I did search for podcasts, and a lot of the ones that I really liked for season 1 and 2 stopped doing it because I think season 2 kind of killed the Serial podcast coverage industry because it was kind of a down year for them. And
yeah. And I don't know how you recapture like season 1 of Serial. It was so big and it was groundbreaking in the industry. Like,
yeah. And that true crime stuff was just ready to explode.
Right.
Like you think it's like the biggest genre of podcasts right now? Like it's the hottest.
It's damn near. Comedy is still like real big. Just
and
like
our TV and
just
film.
Just like comedians
TV and
talking
up
to people is somehow huge. Yeah, TV and film is up there. But
I would like, man, I really wish we could take a run at like the Joe Rogan format where we like
interviewing
bring in
interesting
like,
people interviewing that we want.
Yeah,
to
and
talk
I think we're big enough that we could get that. I that'd be cool to make happen too.
Yeah.
Anyway, just some ideas we could have on the Bald Move TV or the Bald Move podcast if we ever did it, which it sounds like we're not. The Walking Dead season 9A. I think this is maybe because here's the thing. Nothing we could have done in this fall would have gotten us that much traffic, and I think we would have legit had fun. There would have been so much memes about like who's the Angela is Angela King that she take over? Mm-hmm. Like has she saved the franchise? And it would have been fun to cover a fun, silly Walking Dead series that still had a little bit like maybe people pitching their fastball because big changes coming down the pike. I don't know, but I thoroughly enjoyed my brief time with it, and I think it would have been a success. So by that measure, it's got to be in the top 5.
Yeah, this is a weird one for me because I absolutely acknowledge the fact that it would have been the biggest draw possible for that season of our podcasts. So like, from that perspective, I'm like, okay, well, it's probably number 1. However, I haven't seen it. People, you know, talk about it being better than season 8, which in my mind is like, okay, whatever.
Right.
And I don't know how to rank this one because from a podcasting perspective, it would have been way bigger, like you said, than any other thing we could have done. So
also, some of our most fun podcasts were from like season 2 to season 5 of The Walking Dead, and this is right pitched straight down that kind of sensibility, where you could get some momentum where you could get into, and then they could let you down. Like, and I don't even know if they did. Like, I'm just assuming that like they couldn't sustain that run of quality. And also, in episode 4, the wheels kind of fell off of Romulan sub commander Jadis, whatever her fucking name is. But again, I don't know where they're going with that. It's just like, oh, they're going to do something stupid. But instead of every single episode and every single storyline being that, it was like 1 per 4 episodes. Like, yeah, and you almost kind of want a Glenwell fiasco every 4 or 5 episodes just to get the Walking Dead's full potential as a podcast tapped.
Right, right.
What is the odds or interest? Because we haven't talked about this, I think, in a real way. What is the odds or interest of us coming back for 9B?
Pretty low.
Yeah, you don't even want to do just like an Al and Joe. We're not even going to watch it. We're not going to watch 9A. We're just going to jump into 9B after watching the trailer. And
I would feel like the Walking Dead executives win if we did that. Like I would feel like.
I feel like you're in a suicide pact with these guys.
Look, they made a shit show.
Yeah. Yeah, they did.
8 out of 9 years, with season one being like the exception. To reward them by saying, okay, well, all of that is forgiven because you've made a somewhat passable season nine, half of season nine.
No, you're...
Is to say, like, this is the dog that gets kicked and comes back for food the next day, like, when it gets hungry. Fuck that.
You've got the incentive structure all screwed up. You think this is, like, a grudge match between the AMC executives? I'm saying this is, like, a relationship between us and the fans and the show, where, like... Mm-hmm. We could have a lot of fun engaging with it at this in a way that we couldn't in like seasons 6 through 8, right? We could go back to the old days of having fun and fun memes and but also still some like serious. I don't know.
There's so much baggage there. Yeah, so much baggage.
Yeah, I also wonder like what would happen if we honestly did come back for 9B. Like, how many people have just unsubscribed from the feed? How many like it? Also, like we did tie a nice bow, like. I would hate to come back in 9B and be miserable, and then what do you do? Like, we already had the, like, signing off, best moments kind of thing. Like, I'm kind of with you.
For me, it's a principle thing. Like, I made this decision that if I don't stand by it simply to chase traffic, then what the fuck kind of person am I?
I agree. I do think we fucked up, though. We should have.
Yes, it was a mistake financially. It was a mistake from, like, a ratings perspective. Like, everything that matters to a business.
Yes.
But personally, I feel pretty damn good still about the decision.
Oh, see, nah, I think that like, but the thing is, here's the thing. You have to judge the decisions you make based on who you were at the time and information you had. And by that juncture, if you go back
that, yeah.
and like with full knowledge of what happened, I think we make a different choice. But if you just say like, would you do it differently? Like, well, if I go back and I'm that exact same person, this looks like it's going to be a massive shit show. The idea that they'd be able to pull it out, even to say goodbye to Andrew Lincoln, if that's in fact what happened, is unbelievable. It's unbelievable.
The fact that you have to ask that question,
yeah,
is ridiculous to me.
What
like, doesn't that question tell you everything you need to know about how badly you've been jerked around by these fucking people?
Yes, yeah.
Like the fact that they tell you in all of the advertising Andrew Lincoln's last four episodes, and then you're saying, oh, if they actually got rid of him.
Hey, I'm not. I'm
there's
just
no
saying,
trust there. They can't salvage this relationship.
There's
I'm
nothing
sorry.
We can say that will make the following statement not true. We played ourselves by bailing when we did. Now, again,
do we want to continue to get played? Is the question. The answer for me is no.
I just like. So do we have a new? But do we have? Did we learn anything as this company? Like, let's say that we have a podcast that. Like, in feedback, people are like, why are you still covering this show, yet 50, 60,000 people are still listening to it?
Mm-hmm.
We still shovel that product out until people don't want to hear it, right? Like, that's that what we should do as a business.
Yeah, I mean, as from a financial perspective, certainly.
Like, let the people decide when we're done with something. But then again, like, then...
But it
then...
all comes back, like, our relationship with our audience is one based on trust.
Yeah.
And I'm... hesitant to trade any of that away.
Well, plus, like, I don't want to be forced to do The Americans, where I'm just like, oh god, I want this is actually making me feel bad as a person to watch this in this state that I am with the material that I'm given. Like, I don't know. I don't know what the answer is.
I don't
I feel
think
like
you can make
we were
a bad
taught
decision.
A lesson that we don't have any takeaway from because it's very specific to this show and the time and the audience. And you know, if Walking Dead 9B came out in April, we wouldn't even be having this conversation because we're going to be loaded with shit. We're going to be over. So it's like it's just a weird thing. It's so niche-y. It's like hard to derive an operating principle from.
Mm-hmm.
Now, having said all that,
I think it was a huge miss.
Let's quantify it because yeah. I think from one end of the telescope, you look at this and it's the biggest miss.
Mm-hmm.
It's by far the most successful thing we could have done. Maybe other than Westworld all year last year. Oh, and also the Game of Thrones retrospective coverage was massively successful too. So,
yeah.
But yeah, it was.
I mean, of this list, I can't see anything beating it.
Does it should be number one, or should
yeah.
we say
yeah?
Because like this is an old kind of dead product that like you know can make an argument for Bird. So I think.
I almost think if we're going to make Walking Dead live and die on that, on the things we've talked about so far with it, then we have to retire it after this year, because they will continue to make that show. And every year that we don't cover it, it will be the biggest miss, right? Because we'll be stuck at that. Oh, well, we could have had 40,000-50,000 people listening.
Is there any? Well, yeah, I agree. So once you have the biggest miss,
if it wins this category this time, we have to retire it.
If we have the biggest miss and we refuse to cover it again, then yeah. Is there anything, any possible way that you would be compelled to do a season 10? Like, let's, like, what if we heard the buzz on season 9 was that, like, yeah, actually, 14 of the 16 episodes were excellent, and the other two were okay with a couple dodgy parts. Would that get you back in? I think you're just done.
Yeah,
I'm looking at your face. This is your done face.
It's hard to conceive of a scenario that would bring me back into that show.
Yeah.
I'll say that. Like, can I definitively say there's absolutely nothing they could do to bring me back in? No. I mean, if they proved to me over the course of the next few seasons and it started winning awards and it started
moved
like
Cinemax, it was softcore porn now.
Right, I'm back in. No, there are changes they could make to that show, because look, I like zombies.
Freak The Walking Dead.
I mean, fuck me, I've watched many zombie things this year.
And you're going to watch more.
And I will watch more. So I'm not done on zombies, but I'm done with the production of The Walking Dead.
Okay.
So maybe there's something in the future, but they would have to. It's about the pattern. Like, it's really about the pattern for me. Like, show me that you give a shit about your audience.
Yeah.
And maybe I'll be back in.
All right. I'm going to make an argument that Bird Box should be the number two. And here's my argument. Our movie podcasts are very successful. Mm-hmm. We release a podcast that comes out like on Friday morning and says, hey, this thing's hot, while it's and unlike a movie where you've got, you know, a lot of our audience is like our age and they got families, and it's hard to, like, you know, just on a, hey, let's just go out and see this, you know, fucking movie that we didn't plan on seeing, where it's very easy. Like, hey, the kids are in bed. Aaron and Jim said Bird Box is hot. Let's listen to it. Or let's watch it. Like, I feel like these Netflix movies, I don't know if they can pump out the quality, like, of all the average quality is along the lines of like this or a Gerald's Game or something like that, then I think this could be a big thing for us. But if they are like shovelware type of movie things, which I think some of these Netflix are, or like, you know, things that foreign film, like semi-successful foreign films that were optioned for cheap, I don't know. Mm-hmm. But Bird Box, I think, would have been a great test case to see if we had had coverage of that the day it was released, which we could have done. It would have been a great experience to see how well that did.
Yeah. Bird Box is an interesting one, because I didn't come away from it going like, this is fire. I don't think anybody really did, but a community of...
It came out of a vacuum.
The internet community kind of latched onto it in a weird way, even though it's not, like, I don't think anybody's saying this is the best movie that we saw this year. They're simply like, it inspired something in the larger community,
like, oh, Netflix,
and I don't know that I got
something.
That from the movie.
Netflix can do something like A Quiet Place now.
Yeah, but I don't know that I got that same feeling that, you know, some people on the internet got and kind of forced it out into the mass status. So like, my review of that movie wouldn't be this is something you have to watch. It'd be like, that was a pretty good execution on the concept.
But when
I would be much more tepid than the internet at large.
Right, but I think what this is like seeing, it's kind of like when you look at China and their space program. Mm-hmm. Like, you could shit on all day long and be like, well, come back when you've landed a man on the moon and you have a fully stocked space station, all right? But they are doing some impressive things, and they are taking steps to where one of these days they might not be the first persons on the moon, but they might be the first lunar colony. Mm-hmm. And I think with Netflix, we're seeing them hit different milestones. Like, oh, you can do a big budget with Hollywood stars that is popular, but maybe like a Bright, right? Like, mm-hmm. not a critical success, but a commercial success. Okay, now you can do like a horror movie with big budget actors and production values that's on the level of like a Quiet Place. Like, what are we going to do when Netflix has like a Godfather level event? Mm-hmm. Like, oh, this is something that Oscars actually has to think about. Oh shit.
I mean, Roma. Roma is that. And Roma's winning all kinds of awards and being
why isn't Roma on this list?
Probably should be.
I think it's on the people's list, actually, because I compiled it, and that was one where I'm like, Roma, what the fuck is
yeah,
Roma?
Yeah, no, I think we just hit that milestone, actually. We hit a couple of big milestones for Netflix.
Okay.
Both from a like zeitgeist perspective and then from just a straight-up quality perspective.
So that's where I think like maybe Bird Box belongs, because it's one of those things where, and I think we're responsive to it. Like, you know, we're taking Netflix movies seriously, and we're going to try to not be blindsided flat-footed on him anymore. But so that's why I think Bird Box is kind of, because it's the one that we're going to respond to. Walking Dead we're not responding to, you know.
I agree. Bird Box is a big miss this year. Probably number two, although I would make a strong case for Homecoming, because the pedigree is really good. It's Sam Esmail. He kind of has honed everything that he was trying to do in season two of Mr. Robot, and he's made it tighter, and he's made it more entertaining, more compelling, at least to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I really think some of the techniques he's using in his filmmaking are groundbreaking. Like, remember in the 90s and the 80s and stuff, where every sitcom would have like this freeze frame at the end?
Yeah.
What if you had that moment, but it was more like...
The
feeling was frozen.
Yeah.
And you were dwelling in the feeling, but the action was still happening. But it wasn't action that was distracting you from the way you feel about the final moment of the episode.
Yeah.
So it gave you pocket to sit in.
Do you know, like, those cinemagraphs? Have you seen, like, they'll take, like,
the moving still kind
of
things?
One of the ones I can think of is, like, that one, spoilers for Breaking Bad, but, you know, when Walt kills Mike, and there's that, like, big shot of Mike, like, kneeling by the river, and, mm-hmm. like, there's a cinematograph I've seen where it's, like, him, and then Walt, and then, but the only thing moving is the river. Like, it gives you kind of, like, a moment in time that you can inhabit emotionally. It sounds like that's what they're, because I haven't seen it yet, but it sounds like that's what they're going for, like the emotional equivalent of a cinemagraph.
Yeah. Yeah, it's super interesting. I'll talk about this more.
It reminds me of, like, Life is Strange. Like, you know, sometimes it'll prompt you to, like, you can sit on a park bench and just listen to music and look at things. And, like, you can, if your character wants to sit there for 3 hours, they can.
Or for, like, the big decisions, right? They don't give you a time limit.
Yeah.
So you can really think about it. Yeah, right. I feel like that's what Sam's doing with Homecoming. And it's credits sequence, I guess, is how I would term it. I'll talk more about, like, aspect ratios and shit that he's doing in that make it really innovative in, like, the best drama category. But here... How many people I saw people talking about Homecoming, but we have a fucking forum where people who are really interested in television
mm-hmm.
are chatting constantly, and I saw, you know, four or five people mention it.
I hear that there are two shows that are, like, very good, Homecoming and Patriot, and that like the rep is that nobody's watching them.
Right. That's the problem for the biggest miss category.
And is Homecoming, what network is that? Is that Showtime or is that...
It's Amazon Prime streaming.
And it's a lot of stuff I'm hearing nobody watching is Amazon. And I got to say that even if, like, the Romanoffs was a runaway critical success, just judging by our Bald Move TV, nobody... Like, this Amazon thing, I feel like that... Especially, like, I just feel like that there's more people... Like, so many people have Amazon Prime.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like if you have basic cable, you probably have Amazon. If you got the money to spend on basic cable, you probably have the money to spend on Amazon Prime. And I don't understand why. Maybe it's just the fact that there's so many streaming outlets that if you're not Netflix or HBO, you're starving.
Yeah, that's part of it. I think Amazon needs to improve their interfaces for their content portals.
Yeah.
Their website is useless for promoting the content or even browsing content. It's just a standard, like, web interface kind of thing.
Yeah, it's pretty bad.
It's bad. And then their apps aren't much better, frankly.
And like fast forwarding is a chore, rewinding is a chore.
They need to really invest a lot in their interface with their audience.
Yeah.
In order for me to feel like I'm getting a Netflix quality experience from them, even if the content is good.
Well, let me ask you this.
Homecoming certainly is.
Because here's the tiebreaker, I think, maybe, is, or one way you can look at this is, like, what what kind of change, what kind of catalyst for change is this going to be in Bald Move? Like, are you going to advocate for us covering home season, season two, homecoming season two, and how would we do that? Because if you're not, like, I think it's automatically not as big as a miss as Bird Box, because Bird Box is a miss that we're like, oh shit, we don't want this to happen again.
Yeah, and
like Deuce was the biggest miss of last year. We came back with full coverage of it.
Right.
Like, are we going to be responsive to this?
It probably depends on what you think of the show, but yeah, I would be totally in on Homecoming season two.
All right. So then I think that, like, Maniac, Ballad of Buster Scruggs are, like, kind of a repeat of the things we've already said before. And A Star is Born is like, A Star is Born, like, we miss movies, critically acclaimed movies, all the time. Like, it's one of the biggest annoyances I have is I think we do a pretty good job of doing the blockbuster coverage, but we don't do any of the, like, you know, kind of Oscar and indie stuff that we kind of pride ourselves on. Like if we were doing Running Bald movies or Bald Move TV side where we did Bald movies, we wouldn't be doing the Sharp Objects and Leftovers and shit. We'd be doing, you know, just a big, big dumb stuff. And there's nothing wrong with that, but, like, I wish we had a little bit more balance on it. So I guess I don't even care what four, five, and six are, because I feel pretty good about 1, 2, and 3, and I wonder what you think about, like, is 3 a bigger miss in Bird Box? Because it sounds like quality-wise it is, but maybe structurally it's not.
Yeah, I mean, audience-wise, it's certainly not.
Zeitgeist, it's not?
No, I'm pretty okay with this list. I
might put Scruggs up above a Maniac, if you care.
Yeah, I mean, I would even roll, like, A Star is Born into the top 5.
Over Maniac, okay.
Yeah.
Okay, boss. There you go.
Honestly, that's a pretty good list for me.
Okay. Well, there we go. We got it. Biggest miss.
You want to run down the top?
Oh, yes. I forget. I got to do that. Number 1, The Walking Dead, Season 9A. Number 2, Bird Box. Number 3, Homecoming, first season. Number 4, Ballad of Buster Scruggs.
Scruggs.
5, A Star is Born. Biggest surprise. Boy. I like that there's 7 categories here. If this was a Bald Move meme, this would be like the troglobite version. Cause this actually this is the only,
it's like the Rickroll kind
of. Yeah. This is like, but this goes back to Gong Radio, the list of 7.
Wow.
Long time ago, man.
Gong Radio.
Okay. Barry. Season 1, Homecoming Season 1, The Terror Season 1, Always Sunny Finale, Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, Save the Expanse, Bill Hader. Okay,
Barry and Bill Hader on this list? We just padded this out to 7.
It might have been. It's starting to feel like that. Do you want to go this from the top, bottom up?
Sure, bottom up.
Bill Hader. Bill Hader is... I don't know why this always seems like a magic trick when a really good comedian is able to handle drama, because I've heard it argued many, many times that it's all acting and getting laughs is harder than generating other emotion. Like, I don't know why, but, like, it always seems like it's this magic trick. When you see this, like, this is the guy who does bad... Vincent Price impersonations on cheesy After Midnight Saturday Night Live skits, and he's crushing not only the funny parts of Barry, but the parts where he's a war veteran that's being taken advantage of in this industry and suffering from PTSD and kind of incapable of forming friendships and relationships with people.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's incredible.
It is. Yeah. I was not expecting this performance from Bill Hader at all. And I was impressed by it.
I was expecting, like, an Office Space version of an assassin thing. I wasn't expecting, like, poignancy.
Yeah.
And I got poignancy. That's the big... And I guess this is... Everything I'm saying about Barry, or Bill Hader, you could say about Barry itself, maybe more so. We'll find out in 6 more slots. Hashtag Saved Expanse. Why is this the big surprise?
Maybe because it's a sci-fi show? I don't know.
I just felt like when it got canceled and they had all these complicated rights, like, you know, the one world had it one way, the Netflix, there's all these complicated, and it's expensive. And I'm just used to science fiction shows being canceled in their prime or turning to shit. So I'm like, wow, this is going to take, to me, this is going to take over the spot the Firefly had, the great what if.
Yeah.
And then, like, literally you hear this rumor of Jeff Bezos being a fan and him taking personal interest. And, like, within a week, it was a done deal. Mm-hmm.
And the way it was announced, like, with, is it Cass Anbar?
Yeah.
Was, like, had the whole hinting crew, around had the whole cast it. There, and, yeah. There was this big meeting, and it was, like, Cass had, like, leaked it on his phone that this was a thing that might have happened.
Yeah.
And, like, I don't know. There was a lot of buzz around this that kind of came out of nowhere. And I didn't expect from, frankly, this sci-fi show that nobody was watching, apparently. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's a big surprise, but also, like, a big... I'm just happy that it happened, you know?
Yeah, it's like one of those things where it's like you always hear about the fan letter writing campaign that saved Star Trek back in the 60s, and that was like 3,000 letters or something. Mm-hmm. This, like, legit took over the front page of Reddit, trending on Twitter, on Instagram, YouTube. Like, so much stuff came out, and I watched the Reddit group swell in real time. I hope it continues to build an audience, and, you know, it's exciting that because I think the Amazon believes in it and has some deep pockets. But the bad thing about Amazon is, as we discussed in other sections of these deliberations, is it does seem like it's really struggling to get ratings. So it's possible that even less people will watch an even better version of this already fantastic science fiction show.
That's possible. The other possibility is, it's such a good show that it starts to bring more people into the ecosystem, Amazon ecosystem.
I think Expanse is like Game of Thrones, is primed to break out of its genre. Like, I remember the BS Report podcast where Bill Simmons confessed, I started watching Game of Thrones. It was like between season 3 and season 4, and so many, like, Alan Sepinwall come on there, and Andy Greenwald, and, like, his own employees would be like, it's so good. And he's like, I don't watch walking through the forest shit. People walking through the woods, it's like, I don't watch. And, like, he just, like, I feel like it's primed to bust out of this, oh, it's a space show. Yeah. Like, I don't watch shit with phasers. Like, it's literally Game of Thrones in space.
It is, yeah, with some direct ties back to, like, Martin through the people he's worked with and stuff. Yeah.
If maybe, like, that's the thing is, like, I could also see this being just like Game of Thrones in space, and that, like, maybe some writing problems start creeping and Dan and Ty don't finish it, and, like, it, but
they've got a better track record.
They got a better track record and a much larger, I guess, runway.
Yes. Yeah.
So
their seventh book came out this year, or last year, I guess now.
So yeah, the fact that The Expanse did not get canceled. It was shocking to me that Sci-Fi canceled it, because it was doing as well as some of their other expensive shows, like The Son of Krypton or whatever the fuck that is. And
they had this philosophy of, like, we're going to double down in our sci-fi stuff, and we're going to get some really good shows in here.
And it was really good, and, like, critically, I was getting even better reviews than the Battlestar.
Yeah.
And I think it's a much better show than Battlestar. So I couldn't be more pleased that it survived. Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse.
I didn't think an animated Spider-Man would interest me.
No, I was expecting to be kind of blown away visually, because I saw the trailer and it looked like a very innovative animation technique. Mm-hmm. But I didn't think, didn't expect much from, like, a manga Spider-Man. And holy shit, it ends up being, I mean, I don't know where it's going to end up in the, like, bald movies rank, or, like, I know that the Oscars came out, I think, today or yesterday. I didn't see if it made it, like, it surely will make noise in the animated category, but I think you can make an argument for this being in the Field of 12. Mm-hmm. If Black Panther is going to be in there, like, if you're going to say that, like, superhero films are going to start being able to be in here on a regular basis and not just, like, the weird auteur ones that have a well-regarded actor that kills himself that year, like, I why not?
Yeah, sure.
Best...
Do they have an anime category? Surely they do.
I think they have anime. They have animated.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'd probably win that.
Yeah.
If I had to guess.
Yeah. The Always Sunny in It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia finale. Did you get it?
I watched this last night. I didn't get it.
Oh, no.
So I love the Frank stuff, but I was much like Frank in the beginning of this. I didn't get it. Like, I don't get that last 10 minutes.
I mean, how would I explain it?
Please do if you can. I don't know so what like, about that was.
How would a character like Mac come to grips with his homosexuality and present that to the two father figures in his life?
Mm-hmm.
And we're talking about like a very profoundly closeted, homophobic, self-hating, delusional, in denial gay man.
Up until like, yeah, season
up
ago.
Until like this mm-hmm. season. How would he like blossom? Would he be the kind of guy who would be down to like do pony dances on a gay pride flag? Like, where, what is being gay mean to him? Because mm-hmm. it's clearly not like gay pride type stuff.
Right.
And that.
And it's not BDSM stuff.
And that Rob Rob McElhenney?
McElhenney, I think is how you say that. Yeah.
That he would sculpt his body into something that would be this payload that only, like, I don't know how much he trained to get to dance.
Mm-hmm.
And also, like, it's the way it's like you like, you know, when you see the girl that he's practicing with, like, walk out of his apartment, you think that he's gone and doing something else. He's right. Run back to heterosexuality.
Miscategorizes because, that, yeah.
Exactly. And it's just the way that all pays off. And then, like, his real father ultimately turns away in disgust and is, like, adoptive father. Like, I guess I didn't imagine. First of all, did you not find it beautiful?
Just no,
like
it is.
Like yeah. Out of nowhere, they do this interpretive dance sequence.
I did. I kept waiting for the other shoe to drop. I kept waiting for the joke to hit, and that show has kind of trained me to think that way. And so when it doesn't, I was just kind of left like, well, that was nice to look at, but I guess I don't understand really why this is Mac's way to express it.
How I mean,
like I almost think he.
You're right; it's
like,
not an obvious choice, but as soon as I saw it, it immediately made sense, and I don't know how to communicate that feeling if you didn't have it.
Yeah,
like the whole time, me and Cecily are sitting there with our mouths agape at just like, I mean, shit. I'd watch this on if someone sent this to me as a YouTube is just like watch this interpretive dance. Like I'm not all right. 30 seconds in, I'm into it, and just how serious it's taken, and how much dedication this man has been through in the last year just for this one fucking not joke to land. I just thought it's always sunny as fuck, man. No other show could possibly pull it off. But then, you know, I did hear a couple people say I didn't get it. So
I just didn't get it. I'm not saying it's bad.
Maybe it's built up too because you heard so much about it, its reputation.
Yeah. I mean, I was hearing good things about that finale. And I like it. I don't know how to process it, I guess. Like,
it is a bit of a cliffhanger. It's an emotional cliffhanger, too.
Yeah, I mean, it fades out after the dance, so it's like, that's kind of where it leaves you. I guess I just didn't understand the relationship of the dancers. I don't know. I have zero experience with interpretive dance. If it's not in The Big Lebowski, yeah. I haven't fucking seen it. So okay. Part of it may just be me simply not understanding the language of interpretive dance, but I don't know what I was watching. I know that it looked good, and I understand like it took dedication and, you know, a lot of work to get to the place where they could put on this performance, but as to what it means, I have no fucking idea.
I think there was like a freedom aspect. There was like him wrestling with what masculinity looks like in the context of him being gay. And, you know, I think I struggled to put it into words. And I like also kind of like, well,
why it's in dance form, right?
Right. I think that's the other thing is like, how would Mac actually express that in any, like, you know, this is as valid as any other, I don't know. I wish I could explain it better or even walk my thought process. I'm sure if I watched it again, I could like make like, okay, I think this is the language you're using, but, and it's not like I watched a ton of interpretive dance, but like fair enough point. Like I do watch musicals and shit where, you know, like there's like whole 5-6 minute sections of like Singing in the Rain where it's kind of like this, like they're telling a story of a man and a woman and it's entirely through the set and the music and their dance moves. So like maybe I'm a little bit more primed, but well, bummer. I guess that can't be the biggest surprise then. Although it would be pretty, I cannot tell you how surprising this was to actually experience in real time.
Like, that's true. I was not expecting what I got.
Right.
At all.
But you were expecting a big event, and I wasn't. I was expecting like just more dick and fart jokes and Danny DeVito's face being increasingly a train wreck.
Yeah.
So, all right, well, let's move on to The Terror.
Okay. This is a huge surprise.
Yeah, there was not a lot of buzz, not a lot of it just dropped, and I remember I should watch this, but pretty busy, not going to. You actually watched it before me, and dude, this is so fucking good.
Yeah,
and
it was really a lot on the strength of just Jared Harris and his work in Mad Men.
Yeah,
and I like that actor. His work in The Expanse, frankly.
Yep.
And I wanted to see what he could do in this setting, and the setting looked inherently interesting to me, just these frozen ships and how these people are going to survive. And that show turned out to be so much more than that.
Yeah.
And it goes places that I didn't expect it to go. And it was on AMC, which at this point is kind of a shit show in my opinion.
It's like the small town, hometown we moved out of and never looked back because...
Yeah. Yeah. It gave me what I needed to get to where I am now.
I think AMC might be quietly posed for a little bit of a comeback.
Maybe.
They've done some...
I hear good things about Preacher and...
Right. And then they did Halt and Catch Fire, which was a little uneven, but it rounded into good... I think they're still... the ratings haven't come yet, but they're doing really... they're doing interesting and noteworthy work again.
Mm-hmm.
So... kudos to them.
And The Terror was that.
And
so.
I'm really looking forward to season two. Homecoming. I don't know anything about this other than what you've said in other segments and that you're really high on it. And there's a lot of people that like it on the forums.
Yeah,
it's
and
got
that's
Julia
why
Roberts
it's
in it.
Probably hard to recommend this as the top spot on Biggest Surprise because people had been telling me it was good, and I would never have watched it if people hadn't said, this is good, you need to watch it, this is good. Sam Esmail, you need to watch it. He's better than he's ever been. So I heard that quite a few times before I finally decided to give it a go. I guess it's not, super surprising, though, anything coming out of, Amazon Prime at this point?
Yeah.
That's, really stellar.
Well, I think it's important because Sam Esmail now has a second solid thing under his belt, kind of when we saw Noah Hawley do Legion, and it wasn't everyone's cup of tea, and I know you didn't watch season two, but
I thought it was good what I did see.
Legion, I think, cemented him as this is a guy you have to watch. Once you I'm unfortunately the wiener is in an awkward spot because he did some of the best television ever and some of the worst I've ever seen on his sophomore effort, so I think it's if this is as you say, I think this is a big deal for the career of and interest of Sam Esmail.
I don't want to overhype it though. It's not the best show I watched.
It's not The Expanse. It's not Breaking Bad. It's not.
I don't know that I was as engaged by the story as I was The Terror, for instance. But from a filmmaking perspective and a cinematic perspective, it's just revolutionary in my mind. But we'll see what you think of it.
And then Barry, we've talked about Barry. Barry's going to make a lot of noise in our comedy category. It's got marvelous performances by Henry Winkler and Bill Hader and the guy that plays Noho and the guy that plays the Noho's uncle, brother, boss. It's just got so many
Stephen
great...
Stephen Root we didn't talk about
Stephen
at all.
Stephen Root is fucking hilarious. This is very much like The Expanse of comedies for me, and that I watched this thing almost in real, I couldn't wait for the next one to come out.
Yeah.
And every week, the first 2 weeks, I'm like, oh, this is really funny and dark and I like it. And then the third week is like, oh, and it can actually do competent action. That's an interesting facet to add to this show. Uh-huh. And then four and five, I'm like, oh shit, they can go for pretty big drama too.
Mm-hmm.
And Bill Hader can hang with some of this performance. I still think that the final episode is so goddamn ballsy and what it does.
Yeah.
In I don't want to spoil it because it's remarkable and it doesn't take very long to catch up on this thing, but it was unafraid to logically follow through all of its conclusions.
Yeah.
which really puts the main character in some tough emotional space within his own universe, and honestly, my relationship with him as a viewer.
For sure.
I mean, it'll be interesting to follow up, because they definitely went all in on the Villigans. Paint yourself in a corner and see what happens in the writer's room next year. It's like because if they don't watch out, they're gonna have a very unlikable premise with an unlikable star, and it's supposed to be a comedy. And what the hell do you do with that?
Yeah, no, it's strange. Like, I don't know what to even call this show. Is it a comedy? Is it a drama? Which one is the primary thing here? Like, is it an action show? Because they
this is
like the Always Sunny finale dance thing. Yeah. I don't know how to describe this show to someone. Like, they seamlessly blend the darkness and the ridiculous comedy. And there's that scene
there's like gross
at the airstrip. Remember when they pull up in the airstrip?
Uh-huh.
And they're in this the fucking SUV, and it just gets... that scene and the final episode, like, blew my mind.
No, there's DNA of Gross Point Blank, MacGruber, Leon the Professional. There's just so much that they're riffing and lifting from, but also just a whole unique. I mean, because the
way they combine it all,
is
something I can't describe, but you feel it, and it feels real good.
I do think of these like amalgams, like Atlanta's the same way. It's like, is this a very funny comedy, or is this a very funny drama, or is it a very dramatic comedy? I do think that Barry mostly stays more on the funny. Like, they will get gut-wrenching, but there will always be the next-level joke, and about the only time they don't do that is the finale, which I think is appropriate. You know, you want to have that tension throughout. BoJack does that very well too, since they've done it for 5 seasons. It's not a surprise. All right.
And it was a big surprise because, like we mentioned about Bill Hader, you know, he's a comedian.
Yeah.
To us. So
I think it's cheating to have both of these on here. Can we get rid of one? Is it a bigger surprise that Bill Hader, can act?
No, I mean, that whole show is a surprise to me.
Okay.
I think we get rid of Bill Hader. And
all right, Hader.
We remove this from the pantheon of top 7 lists.
Okay. Let's say is Homecoming season 1 more surprising to Barry? It doesn't seem like you would say it.
Probably
is.
Not, no.
Is it more surprising than is the Terror more surprising than Homecoming? I have to recuse myself from all.
Yeah, probably. I mean,
all right.
The pedigrees are on the opposite ends of the spectrum for me.
Right. What about Always Sunny? Is it more surprising than Homecoming? Yeah, this is a tough one to judge with you not getting it.
I will say I did not expect what I got. Like, you had been hyping this episode up for me, and even then I didn't expect it.
Mm-hmm. The biggest surprise is also not
it also has to pay off.
It's not like I come up and punch you in the face when you get up in the morning. That's a huge surprise, but not a welcome one. There's an element of welcome, like, kind of surprise, not like, oh god, you know, or screaming.
Right. It's like the biggest risk, biggest
pleasant
reward category.
Surprise, yeah.
It has to pay off.
Yeah, or else what are we doing here? So
for me it didn't, but I mean, for you it really did. I don't know how to rank those. Especially when we're talking about Homecoming,
I do think it fundamentally changed my idea of what Always Sunny could be if they wanted it to be.
Okay.
Like, they are still extreme, because even that episode you didn't get, it's still a very funny episode.
Mm-hmm.
Like, just,
oh yeah, I mean, Frank's stuff alone is.
I think they did that. Like, they got Danny DeVito. Like, look, we're going to put a shit ton of prosthetics on you and have you go for broke on physical comedy, because this fucking thing Rob's doing, who knows what's going to happen with.
Right.
And like, at least you'll get to the 20-minute mark with a smile on your face and expecting something, and then, like, you know, so like and kudos for them. What they do is hard.
Oh, yeah.
What they do is hard, and I think important.
Especially 13 years in.
Yeah, like, they're engaging with societal issues in a way that, like, I feel like appeals to, like appeals to the type of people that it probably needs to appeal to, you know?
And I feel like it's a recent development in Always Sunny.
Mm.
Like, they've always kind of leaned into the we are awful people, and
yes.
We get maybe a little punished, but we're kind of always fine,
yeah.
And we ruin the lives of people around us. But this season they seem to have stepped up their like social consciousness a little bit,
but without losing any like edge.
No, I mean Dennis is still being absolutely awful.
Yeah,
but the show is just framing it a little differently,
mm-hmm.
and I'm kind of cool with that. I welcome that change.
Okay,
so where would you argue that Always Sunny needs to be?
I don't think it can be higher. I don't think a 10-minute section at the end of the episode, at the end of the season, that does redefine what I think the damn show is capable of. 13 seasons in, I don't think it can be better than Buried the Terror, but I don't know.
Right.
So it's it'll probably just stay where it's at. Now,
okay.
Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, I think might be a top three. But okay. Then Save the Expanse, how do you quantify that? Because that was a very pleasant surprise. I thought I was going to lose because I think the Expanse, we haven't debated this yet, but and maybe we shouldn't. But like the Expanse is one of my favorite shows this year. I really loved it.
Is it in the dramas this year or?
Yeah. Oh yeah. It's definitely
that happened this year.
Yeah, that happened last year. But yeah, the Expanse was one of my favorite things on television this year. Like, it's Game of Thrones level enjoyment and looking forward to.
This is the show that I sat down every week that was a pleasure to watch, that mm-hmm. I was waiting for, anticipating.
Yeah.
Hard to say that about most other shows I watched this year. Even if they were really good.
Yeah, there's some television that like you're looking at your watch and tapping your foot about like, oh man, when's it gonna be, you know? And
yeah.
There's some that are like, oh well, it's I need to see it and I need to see it in the next 2 days because we do a podcast, and then there's
mm-hmm.
yeah, the Expanse is a pleasure watch for me. So I don't know how to do this. Because I can make an argument for Save the Expanse
need to go up.
Yep. But I can make an argument that Save the Expanse should go to the top.
I could maybe follow you there.
I'm going to throw it up there to see how it looks.
Yeah, see how it sits.
I think Spider-Man 2 needs to go down. But why? Why is Spider-Man less surprising than Barry?
Hmm.
I mean, to me, it's just at this stage of the Spider-Man game, everything's been done. Like, they somehow make 10 different origin stories of Spider-Man fun, even though you're sick to death of them, and reinvent what Spider-Man can be, and also do a damn good conventional Spider-Man film all at the same time with mm-hmm. jaw-breaking, technologically sophisticated and beautiful artistic work. That's pretty fucking amazing.
Yeah, I mean, I have a hard time arguing a comedian doing drama over Spider-Man.
Yeah.
But
I think Barry's innovative too.
It's more than just a comedian doing drama, but I have a hard time saying that it was a bigger surprise, because honestly, when I heard animated Spider-Man, my expectations go to zero.
Mm-hmm.
Now I had seen like Bill Hader in Documentary Now and playing a lot of different roles, like most of them definitely in the hardcore comedy category, but right. like also stretching and branching out and like doing things that aren't all comedy.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe I was a little more primed to think, okay, I want to see this thing that Bill Hader is doing, as opposed to Spider-Man, which was like, I don't really have any interest in this. And then I heard the buzz, and then I saw the previews and like really heard the buzz. And when I saw it, it was great. So I feel like, honestly,
I feel like
we might be zoning in on the actual list here.
Yeah, I'm actually wondering if maybe Barry and Terror flip.
Oh, really?
But that's where
I'm trying not to judge these totally on success.
Yeah,
alone,
if I saw the premise of both of these, and I would be like, oh, I think the Terror probably be good.
Right.
Whereas Barry, I'd be like, well,
that's well-trod ground.
Sounds crazy. Yeah. I want to check, but I'll check it out. It's on HBO.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess that's the argument for Barry.
Yeah, the disparity between expectations and results.
Yeah.
is bigger
that's
on Barry.
All, that's all. I think
or
that's
bigger on.
I think you just defined surprise. I think this is a debate that's over now.
Right.
Well
and,
done.
And I'm looking at these and I'm thinking, yeah, expectations versus results. I fully expected the Expanse was gone.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the fucking result there is this lunatic billionaire steps in with his personal pocketbook.
Launching copper rockets to the moon.
And says, no, fuck you. I'm buying this thing and we're going to do this. Like,
because Jeff Bezos loves Expanse as much as we do.
Yeah. That's fucking ridiculous. Of course that wins.
Almost as much as copper.
So, I don't know. I like this list.
Okay. Then there we go. Biggest surprise. We settled on number one is The Expanse. Hashtag save The Expanse. Mm-hmm. Number two, Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. Number three, Barry Season 1. Number four, The Terror Season 1. Number five, Homecoming Season 1. And at the bottom, The Inscrutable Always Sunny Season 13 Finale at number six.
It's time.
Okay.
For the most important category.
Yeah. We're now hitting the joke categories we have from year to year, where we have, like, what was the last year? Like, worst. Like, what's the worst character? I don't know. We sometimes invent stuff just to talk about stuff. And because we had a couple content missteps. The most underappreciated ball move content of 2018. Mm-hmm. We have the Mary Giamatti Christmas. We have the Super Serious Film Fest, Season of the Cage. We have our Twitch.tv experiment. And then two serious answers, The Deuce and The Expanse.
Oh, I think the most serious answer is Christmas 2018. I think.
Okay.
Like, with the exception of maybe 2 and 3, this list is appropriately sorted. But I want to talk about all these because.
Yeah.
I mean, this is more just an outlet for us to talk about.
Yeah. It's almost like
things that we did wrong that we know we did wrong.
It's almost like
how we're going to fix them.
And it is a stealth empire business.
Yeah, pretty much.
Where do we go wrong with the Paul Giamatti Christmas? Because it seems like it's axiomatic to be like, if we came back with the sequel Christmas and did, for example, Home Alone 2, Die Hard 2, like all these other, like, you know, just the sequel Christmas movies, and then picked Miracle on 34th Street. And
I mean,
we
that
did,
doesn't feel bigger and better at
and,
all.
And we got the advent calendar booze, and we got our drunken lunches. People would have loved it, and we would have spent a tenth of the time and effort on it.
In my mind, that's more of the same. It's not bigger and better. What we were going for, I think, this year was bigger and better, right?
Do we think that we underestimated some outsized enthusiasm for some of our Paul Giamatti? People mailed us Giamatti masks and drew us some Giamatti cartoons, sent us a life-size stand-up of Paul Giamatti, and we're like, oh, this has really penetrated the Bald Move audience. So if we sat something like this is the year of the Giamatti, what if we sat a Christmas play around kind of like the Bald Move version of Paul Giamatti, the character, which is a very specific kind of pop culture take on the man himself. And I thought, you know, like it seemed very ambitious, like, and it kept on getting bigger and bigger. And we had the time that we needed to execute but we'd started early enough that we didn't chicken out. We actually kind of executed a version of something. I just think that we screwed up that not everyone is as into the Giamatti stuff.
Yeah, I think it was a miscalculation. It wasn't something where we underdelivered.
It's like 10% of the Bald Move audience was as in on the joke as we were.
Yeah. And we had like discussions leading up to this about how to go bigger and better this year, right? Because we knew, okay, we've kind of escalated this every year with like better booze calendars and going all the way back to the first one where we just hung like booze on a tree.
Yeah.
And that was fun. And then we did like, you know, the 12 days of Christmas thing.
Right.
Or 25 days of Bald Move, whatever it was.
Then we did the badass Christmas.
Right. And it always felt like we were doing something that was fun and interesting and getting bigger and better with it. And this was going to be the ultimate culmination before we collapse it back into something smaller.
Like this, yeah.
Like, and take it back, scale it down again.
Maybe we can do another one of these in a couple of years when we build up some time and all that. But yeah.
And it sounded like a great idea.
And the whole, at no time did I think, oh, we are fucking up. Like, I thought the script we wrote was clever and funny.
And we
like,
spent a long time tuning it and getting it to where we felt good about it.
And it rhymed. Like, there was actually...
I mean, isn't that... Step one, rhyme.
There was some pretty, I thought there was some pretty sick flow. Not like, you know, like, but there was
right,
some,
right.
There's some pretty creative work there. And I thought agree. That yeah. like at every stage, like, you know, when we broke everything down to the scenes and when we come up with the, and we had the ideas to do like the paper dolls and blow them up and go like gonzo practical when Paul has his nervous breakdown, like all that seemed like good ideas. Okay. Another misstep. I don't think people, our audience has been trained to, like, if we made a bunch of 30 to 60 second videos and that's what we were known for, but what we're known for is long form,
that's
like
the
funny, bro-y reviews of movies and television. And what we did was short form entertainment over 24 days out of a month.
But I thought that would work because people liked the 24 days of Bald Move Christmas.
I thought
so
people
much.
Would look forward to like each day a little bit more, a little bit more.
Yeah.
Little bit more.
I mean, we, instead of like buying this advent calendar, of booze and drinking it, we were creating an advent calendar essentially.
Yeah.
We thought it would be little special packages every day.
Yeah.
And that sounded like a cool,
idea. You get like 5 minutes of like funny. And like, I thought that we went in cause we did, we also threw in Guy Ferrari. We had, you know, I just thought that this was a lot.
Yeah, we brought back a lot of recurring jokes,
right?
Bald Move,
right?
Lore,
you know.
But that was the fundamental miscalculation. I think is you nailed it. It's about length of content.
Yeah,
people sit down to feast on our content. They don't sit down to snack.
Yeah, and it's like it didn't hit all of our standard. Like there was not like you can't enjoy it on a podcast player.
Yeah,
I think that. Yeah. So, I mean, I'm not saying that, like, I think the people that liked it really liked it. And I do
think... And I still really love it.
I still really like it. And, you know, you can see we stitched them all together so you can just watch the whole thing. It's like, what, 9 minutes long?
Oh, it's much better to watch all together.
Yeah, you just sit there and watch the thing. And, like, I'm still proud of it. I'm like... and one of these days, I hope real soon before we get another television show. Like, as soon as we get done with the Baldies, like, there'll be, like, a week or two where we're still doing only one show. I would like to do like a behind the scenes to kind of like walk through the special effects and, you know, share some in like just to put a bow on it. And then we can finally be rid of this thing.
I feel like any invested time in this thing after the fact is probably a waste.
Yeah. But like,
unless you're just personally like, I want to do this.
I don't know. Maybe people, cause the other thing is like, it wouldn't surprise me if this becomes like, you know, because the other thing,
cult Bald Move classic.
There's
that...
one more, I think, fatal flaw of this three-legged stool of failure. We overestimated the appetite for Giamatti lore. The short form video content was something out of our kind of like wheelhouse, and people didn't train. Also, the lead up to this show was pretty not great. Like our last big show was the Deuce, then we had the Romanoff, so it's actively. Yeah. Drove people away from our Bald Move TV feed.
Damn near drove me away.
And then, like, so leading up, we had, like, 6 weeks of nothing but club content that was kind of floating this thing. And also, like, you know, this kind of leads up to the Super Serious Film Fest. Wasn't a unqualified success.
I think it was probably more of a success than the Christmas stuff. Because it had accompanying podcasts, which are the traditional form of media we
Of the
produce.
Type of films that we are known for.
Yep.
And you know, every
fun and funny reviews.
And, like, and Nick Cage is a cultural pop figure. Like, you can kind of build a silly, super, you know, super serious kind of. So, do you want to pivot to Super Serious Film Fest? Like,
yeah.
Our
so, I think the real problem with this is simply the time investment. Mm-hmm. And if we found a way to scale it back, it would be much more popular. Because honestly, I think there wasn't a huge difference in format from what we usually do.
And everything we tried to make it, because that's the thing we tried to like, because like this was designed to be something that keeps engagement for the movie, because like the movie feeds is one of our more popular things. Mm-hmm. And if we can build that into something where people expect
content, we didn't put it in the movie feed.
Well,
it was only
right.
in the Super Serious Film Fest feed, because a lot of the, at least on my side of the fence, a lot of the impetus here was to get something on YouTube that could start to branch our audience out to there. And so I very much thought of this as a video first thing. And I wanted it to kind of stand on its own. I know you pushed back against that because you thought, well, we should release podcasts of all this stuff. And
why wouldn't we?
Right. And I kind of went along with that. But the place where I stopped was releasing it in the movies feed.
So I didn't know we didn't do that.
I don't know. I still have a hard time calling that a mistake.
No, I mean, it's
because it's a good experiment.
Worst, it's an experience. It's an A-B test, right?
Yeah, yeah. And next time we release it in the movies feed, but that's the thing. The movies feed is a guaranteed 5,000 to 7,000 right. downloads, period.
Right.
No matter what we're covering. So I don't know what that would tell us.
Well, so here's my thought.
If next time we did it in the.
I think that what we. For Super Serious Film Fest shows that there is an appetite for a themed series of reviews of movies, okay? Like, I don't think there's... I think that core
it's
idea...
the thing I like most about it, yeah.
I think that the things that we tried to do, like, to try to make it extra and, like, justify it being club content is where we went wrong. That, like...
like the rewrites?
The rewrites were hard to do because it's essentially a long-form quip that you don't get to, like, say, ah, oh, this topic's not interesting. Like,
right.
And we didn't know that because we kind of game-planned out, like... And we did like two or three movies just kind of like, could we do this? And the ones we picked were the easiest ones.
Yeah, The Rock turned out to be the best,
sure,
and it was the
yeah,
first, and
yeah.
It gave us this false impression that they'd all be that easy.
Right, and then you get to something like Adaptation, like, Jesus Christ, Weatherman, like, do you go funny or serious? And,
right.
You know, like, that was tough, and once we started to get to tough, it went fine. The live watches, like, the thing is the live watches are in a tough place because to do them right, we'd have to, like, do a deal with the studio to, like, the broadcast a movie and our commentary at the same time. Or we'd have to, like, yeah. partner with somebody like Rift Tracks that's got this technology figured out that, like, we can synchronize our track with a movie and, like, do it very easy and automatic. But the compromise thing we do gets copyright strikes, which are bullshit, and we like, I think live watches have legs, but to make them easy, we violate copyright, and to make it support copyright, it's hard to enjoy. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, but I think Super Serious Film Fest will continue forward, but they'll be just essentially themed movie reviews that come out at targeted times.
Yeah, and I think we'll keep it, you know, both podcast and video format, I imagine, on that.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
Because I do, like, 2019 is one of those things where I think video could be important for us long term.
Yeah. I see more and more people releasing...
I don't
want to
sacrifice podcasting for that, but...
Yeah, I think we could easily... like, once we get the new studio where we get our audio and video dialed in, mm-hmm. we can easily... not just release the whole podcast, like, maybe minus the feedback, but maybe, like, the thing that I'd really like to do is that, like, pull a 10 or 15 minute interesting conversation out of, like, the True Detective podcast, you know, and or out of any podcast, and, like, throw that up there. Because I see there's some content creators are doing that. Like, actually, that's what Twitch is doing to really pour gasoline on their growth is, like, YouTube is kind of like the shitty version of Twitch, but what it's really good is taking the good 10 or 15 minutes out of an hour stream mm-hmm. and posting it there and saying, if you want to watch this live, go to twitch.tv/bumfuck. And I think that could be, it, you know, that could be what Bald Move does, is just Bald Move logo, 10 minute interesting conversation about something culturally relevant with for more great podcasts and videos, go to baldmove.com. And right. I think if we build an audience, if it becomes a gasoline for a podcast fire, great. If we build a video audience, even better.
Yeah. So, I think it's probably like you gotta start giving those clips, like, provocative might be the wrong word, but mm-hmm. provocative type names.
Yeah, yeah. Clickbait.
Like, yeah. And then, like,
and clickbait images, you know, like, you expect to see lots of faces where we're like, ah, or like,
no,
oh,
no,
or,
no,
you know,
no, I can't.
No, hey, if you're going to kill clickbait, then you don't half clickbait. You go full clickbait or not at all.
I think that, but I think, like, explicitly that works for that short form. Like, here's a couple of minutes to get you interested in what we're doing.
Yeah.
But for the long form stuff, I think you very much keep it like, this is episode 3 of season 3 of this show.
Sure.
And, you know, people tune in because they're looking specifically for that content.
Yeah.
There's a difference between, like, content that people search for and content that catches people's eyes.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
And I think we don't leverage the latter at all.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe sometime this year if we get somebody in the studio to help us out with that.
So, anything that we want to say about Super Serious Film Fest, should we move on to twitch.tv?
I don't think it was... more underappreciated than Christmas. I think that's in the right order so far.
Yeah, because like Super Serious, I think we were kind of like, we're not sure if this is a thing. This is a thing we're trying to do to like try to replace the content we were losing for not doing commission podcasts, to try to do some interesting club content, to try to do something that's, because we're trying to fit seasonal stuff, because we don't every time we add a club thing, we don't want to be like, oh, we have to do this in addition. We want to be able to move things in and out to keep things fresh for us and you. So
some of the nostalgia stuff.
Yeah. Like some of the nostalgia. Yeah. Like, to, you know,
to cover stuff we hadn't talked about. That's awesome.
Let's talk about Twitch.tv.
Okay. This is one that
the people that liked it. And we had a very faithful, regular crew of audience but here's the problem.
Okay. This is a weird one because I know we're not going to do Christmas 2018 again.
Yeah.
There's no way we do that format again.
Yeah.
Super Serious Film Fest, I'm almost positive we will do that again in a more limited fashion. Twitch TV is very much up in the air.
Yeah.
Because I think there could be an audience for us.
And I think we'll do things
we just didn't hit it quite right.
Like we're obviously going to use this for our Groundhog's Day stuff. I could see us, like, again, if we ever came up with, like, a co-op or adversarial game that Jim and I were both in, like, I think it was really... Of all of our streams, like the Sea of Thieves and like the Spy Party, and some of the early, like some of the Rocket game stuff, where like the thing with Rocket League is the stakes are they're so low. But I thought like us playing Rocket League, like especially the bad, like some of the stupid shit like basketball was super fun.
That was fun. Yeah.
Or if we took Rocket League and we actually got good at it, where we could play semi-competitive duos, like it's got to be we have to have a reason to go to Twitch, because tune in for 3 to 4 hours twice a week of us playing whatever we're going to play is not going to bring the boys and girls to the yard. Well, it'll bring the same 30 to 40 boys and girls that we all, you know, that
that we're propping that up.
We're propping it up, and they're being very supportive, and they were very generous with their bits and their subscriptions.
To the point where I felt guilty.
To the point where we felt, because that's the thing. Like
week in and week out, I'm going to come back and take your money.
I mean, that's the way entertainers
are paid. Why do I feel
this
way? Why do I have a conscience? God damn it.
Right, right. Can I uninstall this? Can Aaron 2.0 just omit the guilt for taking money for services? Or you feel like you have to have... I don't know. But yeah, I just think that like... also, we had a kind of rough luck that it's hard to play a game and be entertaining and interface with chat. And some of the games we played, I felt like, because I hadn't mastered that, it was very hard for me to pay attention to what you were doing in, like, God of War, which has a very deep crafting and, like, weapon customization system that we never really paid attention to, and intricate combat mechanics based on different weapons and shields and shit that you got that we never paid attention to, and a story that we barely engaged with because it was too hard to do that. I think that the... Detroit Becoming Human was a very successful stream because we kind of did the same shit.
Kind of just a live watch, right?
Right. But then people kind of felt pissed that we weren't being as interactive about the choices we made, and we were a little trolly about some of the choices we made. And
yeah.
But I think the Twitch audience wants you to play the games they want you to play at the times that they can watch it. And the ones that are most successful essentially play 16 hours a day, and they play like 2 8-hour shifts. And guess what? You can't do a podcast.
Yeah.
You can't run a podcast empire and play video games for 16 hours a day.
No, you cannot.
I can't anyway. There might be guys out there that
either.
Can. So that's, do you want to say more about Twitch?
I'll say, I don't think that's totally off the table for 2019. I think we would like to find a way to get back to it eventually, but...
And it's something like, Assess and I play quite a few co-op video games, and we always think it'd be super fun to play like them in front of an audience, but... You know, that's the other lesson I learned, is that some things that are fun when you play by yourself, second you make it a performance, it sounds crazy, but playing video games for an audience turns it into a job.
Yeah.
So, you know, having to be like, well, if we just have time, we'll play it tonight versus, well, we have to play from 7 to 9 tonight because it's Wednesday. That's the kind of shit that, you know, especially for people that already have full-time jobs, which Bald Move and Cecily's job and, you know, Jim's girlfriend, all that stuff. So Twitch.tv, We're definitely going to be using it here and there, but I don't. Yeah, coming back as a weekly feature, something would have to really change. Oh, one thing that could really change is it does seem like from everything I'm seeing from Twitch that they are trying to come up with some kind of let's watch the way they have the let's play thing going. And if they came up with a really slick way to secure the rights for a live broadcast and like automatically that debit from your monthly account, or you can pay a lump sum and try like and let the people like synchronize the watching of the thing. Like if they ever get that figured out, then
if Amazon, you know, when they're licensing their movies from these studios, could just, you know, add an extra dollar to the fucking total and just say now our Twitch streamers can stream this movie.
Right. And we don't even, and the thing that seems to work with Hollywood is we don't even know if this thing is a thing. So let's like sign a low contract for 3 years and see what happens. You know, then the writers will strike and everybody get there. But you know what I'm saying? Like, I think that's, that seems
we're not
like
getting our Twitch money.
And I keep forgetting that Twitch is tied to Amazon. So absolutely they could do that.
Yeah. Just package deal with, you know, the movies that they have on their streaming service.
Yeah, yeah. Or maybe make it to where only, like, only Prime members can view this stream, and anything that's that's streamable through Prime, like that, I mean, they could just do that.
They could do it.
Because if everyone has a legal right to watch it, so if it's, they could just do that.
Mm-hmm.
So that might be a path that they're pursuing.
Why don't we write to Bezos and say, look, you helped us out on this Expanse thing. We know you got one more favor in your pocket.
Right, right. We'll generate some extra pennies. Are you losing half of them? We'll generate some extra pennies for us with the live watches.
But I think it would be great when that switch finally flips to have an audience on Twitch that we can just say,
well, plus if that,
now this is what we do.
Imagine that's a new category. Mm-hmm. We've been practicing it for years.
Yeah.
Like, I think that we would be primed to kind of take over that spot if we did, like,
a couple
shows a week.
Especially if we were building some kind of Twitch audience in the meantime.
Mm.
Like, that's kind of why I don't want to rule out Twitch entirely.
Don't want to abandon it. Okay. Yeah. Can we talk about then the Deuce is just not enough people watch the Deuce, like the Wire before it.
No, like, I feel like the Deuce and the Expanse are one and the same here.
The 10 years from now, people, well, I think the Expanse will actually has a shot of growing into an audience where the Deuce is just.
Right. I mean, in terms of
10
how
years
we,
from now, it'll be the new show. Everyone's going to say, have you seen the Deuce? The Deuce is so amazing. Oh, it has so much to say about the prostitute. Because, you know, we're going to the next 30 years, we're going to fight about all this Vice shit.
Oh, for sure.
Like,
yeah, I mean,
like
marijuana is the tip of the iceberg here.
Yeah, and then once you start talking about drugs, it's going to be, why are we making, like, every problem that is made by making drugs illegal, like, same thing about prostitutes as gambling. Like, it's going to be a sea change.
Yeah.
And it's going to be, like, prying puritanical lollipops from puritanical babies, but.
Yeah, but in terms of, like, why they were underappreciated, I mean, these are one and the same in that. They just didn't have the audience.
Yeah. I mean, sci-fi.
They were great shows that didn't get the eyeballs.
Sci-fi has built an audience expectation that they have shitty Sharknado-level entertainment, and when they finally get a good show that maybe they're losing a little bit. I mean, I can't fucking understand why sci-fi let this happen.
Even if
they're losing money, they're gay, like. But the thing is like, I don't think Expanse even is appreciated critically as much as it should be before, like, now that it got kicked off the air and a lot of critics are like, oh, look at this. Like, we gotta like, look at this from a zeitgeist perspective. I wonder if people will actually start giving it another shot. Because it's still, it's not that much to catch up on.
No.
You know?
I mean, what, 13 episode seasons? I mean,
and they're like broadcast 43-45 minute episodes, so
true,
they're not like the 56, or maybe it's an hour and 13 minutes. You get like last season was only 10 episodes. Like it's you're right at like 30-ish hours of content. And now's the time to get in on it, because I think the Expanse could, it's got another four probably. Have they talked about how many seasons they think that this will have?
I assume it could go at least another four, because there are going to be 9 books in total.
But I heard that they're not necessarily going to adapt all the books, that it's going to be more of.
Yeah, but even, I mean, so we're through book 3 at the moment, so we got 6 more books. I think you could get 4 seasons out of 6 books.
Oh, because I was thinking maybe there'd be a stopping point. Because I think that if Expanse stopped here this year, it wouldn't have been the worst thing from a narrative standpoint. Like, this felt like a definitive close of a lot of plot lines, and like definitely it's a little bit of because it ended the same way like Close Encounters of the Third Kind ends, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know that a big endeavor and personal and civilization voyage is about to begin, but the story of its beginning has been told. And I felt like
this is the definitive close to act one of the series.
Just like Breaking Bad could have ended after season four,
mm-hmm.
and it wouldn't, like, you would have missed season five, but narratively it have felt like a complete product, I think. So
the great thing about The Expanse, having read the fourth book, is that, yes, I mean, that is absolutely true.
Mm-hmm.
It could end there, but they also have some really good directions to take the show
I imagine.
What happened.
If the first third of the story is in the books, that there's still a lot more interesting left to make.
It doesn't feel forced at all. It's like, these are the natural consequences of everything that happened before it, and they're just as interesting, if not more so, than what we've already seen.
So the Deuce, like I said, the Deuce is going to have another season, is going to be over, and then, you know, I think there's no saving the Deuce. I hope people will grow to appreciate The Expanse. Are we going to continue to cover the Deuce for its final season?
Oh, I would think so, yeah.
Unless it's going against...
Yeah, I mean, it's all about timing.
Yeah.
For these small shows.
There's going to be, like, you know, if you get a week that has, like... Imagine, like, a week that runs down, and you're staring down the barrel of Better Call Saul, Fargo, Mr. Robot, and the Deuce. Boy. Mm.
It's hard not to say either Fargo or the Deuce has got to go.
Right.
Because I think those are the two lowest rated shows out of those.
Yeah. Yeah. But it would suck because the mm-hmm. Deuce is amongst the better ones. So there we go. Underappreciated Bald Move content for 2018. Not a totally serious category. But I imagine when we do it on the award show, people have questions. And this mm-hmm. is our attempt to answer those.